Hello, and welcome to the We're Not Stumped podcast. I'm your host, Mike Boland, and I'm a congenital amputee of the right hand. In this show, I will interview other amputees and allow them to tell you their incredible life stories. I'll also feature family members of amputees and others who support the amputee community, all in an effort to discuss the challenges and triumphs of those living with limb loss. So stick around and listen to inspirational stories and find out why we say we're not stumped.
All right. Well, hello, everyone. Welcome to the We're Not Stumped podcast. I'm very happy to have John Higbee on. I met John a few weeks ago. We live pretty close to each other, but I didn't know him at all. But interestingly enough, he's a stand-up comedian as well. Unlike me, though, he's good. So, John, thank you so much for being here. Appreciate
Thanks,
it.
Thanks, Mike.
Well, let's hear the story. I want to learn a little bit more about John today.
Well, what do you want to know? What story do you want to know in my life?
Well, let's say, since we're both amputees.
How I lost my hands?
Yes.
Well, it is kind of a sad story. I just turned 21, and I wanted to go experience Vegas legally for once. And it was rough. I learned two tough lessons. One, I suck at cards. And two, the mafia don't fuck around.
But, so it's all about Vegas, then.
It's Vegas, baby.
Yeah. Well, don't show your hand.
Never. I used to think I'd never want to go to Vegas because I don't really gamble.
Yeah.
But you go there and you can do other things besides gambling.
Hey.
Like drinking on the street,
okay.
And stuff like that.
I don't want to judge. I don't know whether I need to know, but I'm sure you have some good stories.
You ever been to Vegas?
I've been to Vegas.
What do you like about Vegas?
People watch.
Yeah.
Yeah,
exactly.
I like people watching.
I felt like what I did was I had this hat. That was one of those fuzzy, like, pimp hats.
Yeah.
And I wanted to, you know, just walking around with that, I felt kind of cool. But then I thought I'd, like, jazz it up. So I went to this little, like, convenience store, and they sold, like, little trinkets and stuff, like... There was one like a north, south, east, west, like a little ball you put in your car. And there was like a little chicken and stuff like that. So I hung them from the hat and walked around. I felt different.
Yeah.
I felt like people weren't just looking at me because I was a freak. I felt like a star.
People were, like, I like to do the people watching, but at that point you were like the person that people wanted to watch, it seemed
right,
like.
Right.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah.
So.
But I like going there because you feel like you're free there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Unless it's COVID, and then you can't go anywhere.
Then not so much.
Right. But no, seriously, what happened was I was 21, and I was hanging out around ASU, and I think we had gone bar hopping because, you know, it's fun going when you're legal. You know, you're not like, oh, shoot, they're going to find out, you know, that. A fake ID, you know, they're going to put me in prison. But so I think I'd gone to like probably two or three bars that night, and then we headed over to a party near campus, and we were hanging out there for a while. I had a girlfriend, kind of, we had breakfast, we broke up, so I really was free. So we went over to Manzanita, we were going to try to get into a party there, and when you go in to the front, you got to go through this one thing where you show your key to get up on the elevators. So I was with a couple of buddies, and we got stopped, you know, because we didn't have keys. But then I came back, and actually I got to get through with some other, you know, you pretend like you're with another group. So I went up to, like, the sixth floor, and I was going to meet my friends. And I guess they never made it up, or... So I came back down, and they weren't down in the lobby. So I just, like, left Manzanita and went across the street, which is on, like, University, and right by the bridge. Palm Walk is right there.
Yeah.
So I was walking down Palm Walk, and when I was actually going to school there legally, I had gone down into the tunnels. So that was kind of a fun thing to do, go exploring. You know, break into the buildings through their utility rooms.
I guess it's good.
Yeah.
The time has elapsed, so you won't get busted for that now.
I really didn't steal much, or I never got caught. So if you never get caught, is it really illegal?
No.
I don't know. So I was going down Palm Walk, and I felt like, hey, let's go into the physical science building tonight, because I'm 21, you know, I'm an adult. What can they do? Put me in prison? Probably. So there was like a cement block against the building, and it had a grate on it. And I looked down. I couldn't really see nothing down there. And it's like, I wonder where that goes. Because over about 10 feet from there was another cement thing with a grate. And I knew there was like air conditioning units down there. So it's like, hey, what's the worst that could be? Air conditioner, a pit to nowhere. So I slid the grate open and was hanging. And then I dropped. And it was about a 14-foot drop. But I guess since I was hanging, you know, it wasn't that long. But I still kind of, when I landed, I kind of tweaked my ankle. I got weak ankles, and that's not good because I need those. So I was down there, and there's like no way going up 14 feet. So on the side of the wall going into the building was like metal louvers. So I kicked those open and broke in. And then I was in there was a room that was about 10 feet wide, 15 feet deep, had a door on the other side, and I went up to the door. There's no handle on the inside. It's like, that's weird. Usually doors have two handles.
Yeah.
So I wasn't going out that door, but in the corner, there was another vent with the light coming through. It's like, need to get in there. So I... my eyes were playing tricks on me. I could have sworn I saw something I could climb onto to get up on the vent, into the vent. But there was actually like three transformers bolted to the wall. And I walked up, and I guess I hit two of them at once, and there were 6,500 volts apiece.
Oh, wow.
So it like went in one arm and shot out the other arm and shot me back against the brick wall. And I left like a grapefruit size, if it's a big grapefruit, size splat of blood. And then I went down. I didn't see that at that point. I saw pictures later on in the trial. So I was down on the ground, and it didn't knock me out. And I was like, now my eyes are adjusted, right? I could see, and I was like looking at my hands, and they kind of looked like burnt hot dogs. And I was like, that ain't good. But it's still not registering that what happened. So I kind of pass out, had some weird dreams, and in the morning crawled back over to where I kicked in the louvers to get in that room, and I was just like yelling for help. And there's like an exercise, part of an exercise path or whatever, where there was some chin-up bars or something, and I don't know if the guy was doing pull-ups or what. He heard me yelling for help, then he called the police or an ambulance, and there was a Tempe St. Luke's right over there on Mill. So they sent an ambulance over, and they stuck a ladder down, but they weren't going to pull me out of there that way. So they had to wait till someone to open up the door. And then I remember talking to some people, I don't know, they were probably police, but they were asking me what I was doing. And I'm a little sneaky Pete once in a while. So I think I told them I was sleeping, and I fell down into the grate, you know. So they took me over to Tempe St. Luke's. And, I remember when they're putting me in my ambulance, that's where they start cutting my clothes off and stuff. And it's like, that's... kiss those clothes goodbye. But I had my brand new shoes on, and those made it through the thing. So they took me to Tempe St. Luke's, and then they helicoptered me out to Maricopa Medical. And that was a good thing because Maricopa Medical had like one of the top 10 burn units in the country.
I didn't know that.
I stayed in there for like 8 or 9 weeks. Maybe 6 weeks.
Wow.
It was a little fuzzy. But, you know, it's like sad because my dad's in the military. And he was over in Okinawa, so they had to bring him back on a mercy release. And so he helped because my mom wasn't going to shower me and, you know, have to pick me up or whatever I had to do.
Sure.
But I lost, like, in that time, I was like 185, 190. I went down to like 125.
Wow.
So I was like kind of Skeletor man. And they thought I was going to die, but I proved them wrong.
That's good. You were 21 at the time, you said, right?
Yeah, just turned 21. So I was going to say, it's like when you're 21, like nothing can kill you. So that's the best time to fart around. But I'm sure people die when they're 21. They're just not lucky like I am.
No, you are lucky. Yeah, that's quite a story. I mean, again, being a congenital amputee like I am, I have no stories like that. And I really tip my hat.
But you can, like, make up stuff.
Well, I do.
And no one's going to fact check you, right?
No, they don't.
Oh, yeah, I did the research on you. You were born that way, man.
Cheater. But so the first 21 years of your life.
Yeah.
You know, two hands, everything. The next, I'll say, 10 years. We won't embellish how old we are, but the next few years, let's say.
Right. I've had hooks longer than I've had hands.
Wow. Yeah, and we talked about this the other day. You've always had hooks, is that correct? Did you try any kind of other kind of prosthetics?
I tried myoelectric. I just went into the store where they make prosthetics, and I might have been hanger.
Okay.
Right? Yep. So they clamped this thing on my forearm, and that's how myoelectric works on your muscles. Mm-hmm. So you kind of flex your bicep and your tricep, and it makes it open and close. And it seemed cool until you find out how much they are. And it's like, I don't think most insurance, you know, if it's an industrial, if you're working, you know, their insurance might pay for it. But, you know, my insurance, we couldn't justify I needed myoelectric.
Interesting.
But I like these. I think they're more dependable.
Yeah. Yeah, that's, I have one myself, so it's been a while. When I was watching you the other day, you know, as we were talking, I'm like, I think I'm still as good as using my hook, but there's no way. You are so good at using your hook. It's amazing. Yeah.
Survival, man.
Yeah, absolutely. So, and I noticed that you have contraptions and things that you've built.
I think when I learned Velcro, you know, that's a godsend because I Velcro everything. Got my phone, my flashlight, locked to the car. This is just on for looks. A wallet made out of a cigarette case with my magnet on there, keep it from me damaging it because sometimes it won't close or something, so I kind of beat on it. I got another fob. They call these fobs. I don't know what happened. This is to a camera that I have, and I don't know where that camera is. I think it's in my car right now, but I don't think I'm going to go look for it because I'm kind of busy. And but yeah, I feel
I'll take a picture
cool.
Now. Maybe get a good picture of your trunk. We don't know. So
right.
Yeah, maybe.
So that's my story.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's more.
Oh, I'm sure there... Hey, listen, I mean, you were talking...
There's more exciting stories.
Oh, I don't know about that. I mean, I just mean there's so much more to your story than just
like the wood chipper story or garbage disposal story or shark story.
Yeah.
You know, being a scuba diver and you see a chest of gold or something, but there's a big shark in between...
And
you're
gold.
So greedy that you don't care about
the shark.
I've
heard that one before. We won't say why, but we have heard that one before.
Must have been on YouTube late night.
Oh, yes. Yeah, it must be. Which, you know, which is one of the interesting things to me, you know, getting to know you recently. We live within miles of each other. We're not talking like we live 50 miles from each other.
Right, 4 miles.
4 miles from each other.
Yeah.
And I think 85, 86 is when this happened to you.
87.
We even have a common friend. We even have, and to think that we've lived this close, and we never ran into each other after in all these years. It's
Kyle.
Kyle Burr. You're exactly right. I went to high school with him. You worked with him.
I worked with him, so this was like 30 years ago, 25 years ago. So I can't consider him a friend, more of an acquaintance.
Okay.
But I see a lot of. He likes to cook a lot.
Oh yes, he does. Yeah, he's a good.
You ever go party with him?
No, I haven't.
What?
No, he's... And see, obviously you're more of a friend than I am.
I've never eaten with him.
No, I have not, no. We went to, I think, maybe from elementary school, we graduated together. I did see him a few weeks ago. It was good to see him.
Oh, yeah.
But, I mean, it's just weird to think that it's such a small world, and I'm sure people are like this to you like they are to me. Hey, I know a guy with one hand. Hey, I know a guy with no hands. It happens every day. It's like, I don't see any of these people. You know, and then here we are, 4 miles apart, we never even see each other. I think it's kind of weird.
We just don't go to the same bars.
Oh, I think we do. We've been the same. You know, there's been some local bars we've been to together recently. He's like, I've been to this place. Nobody said anything. He's like, oh, okay.
But not consistently. No. Where?
Well, I'm not as consistent as you, and I'm not going to judge.
Well, you're married with children.
Yes.
So
yeah.
You got, I got two cats.
How are they doing?
They're still alive.
Yeah. Well, you know.
One's like
despite
18,
your best efforts.
Yeah, one's 18.
Wow.
One's probably like 12 or 13. So it's hard having cats and pets because, you know, and you have them for such a long time, they're like almost like people.
They are. They're absolutely like children. Yeah, absolutely.
I wouldn't say children. I'd just say people.
I don't know. I mean, you know, you just get so attached to them, and it's hard when you,
yeah,
when you lose them. Yeah,
yeah.
But they bring so much to
the
life.
Table.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So how has everything changed in your life? What would you?
I probably don't mean as much women as I used to, but I'm a shy person in the first place, so I expect them to come to me, you know, be excited by me. But it's hard to sell yourself sometimes when you're not, you know, putting yourself out there. Like, hey, how you doing? I like that shirt. You know,
yeah.
Like whatever.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. Some people will say anything to kind of. But I like being more real. I like actually meeting girls that know my friends or something, because you can find out background on them, you know, so you can ask them questions and stuff.
Hope you haven't met any of, well, I've been married for almost 30 years. You probably have not met any of my old girls.
Not yet.
So, and before we get this up, how did you start comedy? How, why?
It was like 2009, 2010.
Oh.
I've been doing AutoCAD drafting for a long time. I think I got laid off when the market crashed. And I just didn't feel like going back into, well, it wasn't a big demand for drafters at that point. So I thought about like going back to school. So somehow I just saw something about comedy classes. So I thought, man, I've been funny,
yeah,
but not in an official kind of way.
Yeah.
More like witty, dry humor. So I... saw it was like Tony Vizek was teaching a class clowns.
Oh, nice.
And they were performing at the improv. So I went to an improv show and it's like, yeah, I could probably do that, you know. But they were teaching the classes off of Raintree and the 101.
Okay.
It was that airport. It was actually in the hangar. There was a hangar there with office building.
Yeah.
So we'd go into office, and I guess they were filming stuff there because it had like a green screen in the back.
Oh, neat.
And so that was interesting because, you know, there was probably, you know, 15 other comics and stuff, and met some nice people. And
yeah.
I remember one of the first big shows I did was with Rich Scheidner from Married with Children.
Oh, wow.
He was Al's friend at the shoe store.
Okay.
You know, this guy.
You're
right.
Wow.
So he was like, he was out of comedy, I think, for like 10 years. He had sold his jokes to Jeff Foxworthy. And so he was kind of getting back in the business, and he had to like recreate his jokes. But a really nice guy. So he did a show with Dave and Buster's, and they asked me to be on it. And I thought I did really good,
yeah,
you know, under the circumstances, because I've never been that, you know, outgoing, hey, you know, put me behind a mic and I'll say anything. And what I'd learned is if I got something to say, like I've written it down and memorized it or, you know, learned it, and you go up and it's funny, you know, that smooths everything out, you know, people laughing and not just chirp, chirp, chirp.
Yeah.
Well, I'll go on to my next joke.
Whoops.
Yeah.
That happened.
I think I was lucky where I... going through the comedy classes, you know, getting comfortable behind the mic and we'd have writing sessions and people would pump your jokes up with tags and stuff, and that was great. And I could tell now because I did that for like 2 years, and now when I write jokes, you know, they're just really quick.
That's
like
good.
I have a hard time washing my balls because I don't have any. So my jokes are really quick. So I need like 20 to 25 jokes to do, you know, 7 minutes. And
mm-hmm.
Unless there's an extra laugh in the room, you know, that'll stretch it out. But
I think it's harder to actually tell a story and make it funny than it is to do quick. I mean, telling stories, people are like, can you get to the punchline, please?
Right. It's got to be a real funny story.
Yeah,
in the first
it's got to be a very funny story. It's got to be broken up with
or comedy. Embellished.
Yeah, well, I like the lie, and so I'll do that for sure.
Right.
So here's another thing. I know before you got here, thank you for coming here, by the way. Oh, by the way, we're at Badlands Bar and Grill. Badlands, this place is great. I love this place. Great
Except corners. For the music.
They you don't like country.
No. Yeah. Except like the old stuff. Johnny Cash.
Yeah.
Willie Nelson.
Well, they do play all sorts of music. They happen to be playing country here. This place is a great place.
Yeah, maybe we should ask them, like, change it to, like, the, well, the 70s to 80s rock.
Well, we're going to see. If this is live, we'll know that this microphone worked well enough. Actually, what I should have probably done was ask them to... They offered to tone it down a little bit so all we can right. do it, and I probably should have done that before. But what I was going to say is, before you got here, you went to go work out. So you still work out, you're still active, you still do whatever you can, apparently.
Yeah, that comes and goes, you know.
Well, like all of us.
I hope my parents will watch this, but I smoke weed. And when I do that, it kind of makes me lazy. But I was trying to work out and smoke at the same time, but you just don't have the same endurance and drive.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'd ride the bike when I was smoking, and I could do like 10 minutes. And so I quit smoking, and it's been like 46 days, so I feel pretty good. So I'm going like 15 minutes or 5 miles.
Wow, that's
so nice. I feel really good about that. And I work out real quick, too, because there's not a lot of machinery. I don't do free weights or anything at all.
I get you.
And I'm not sitting there, since I don't have any friends or anything, I'm not on my phone texting or whatever. I notice that a lot, like people will sit around just kind of looking at their phones in between sets. Mm. It's like, nah, you need to work it, you know, you need to push yourself. So I enjoy working out.
So did you play a lot of sports before? Do you play a lot of sports now? Anything about sports? Because I know you like to work on computers, so I know there's that part of your life. But
I played a little flag football at ASU.
Okay.
I played football I went to Yuma High. I'm sorry.
I didn't know you lived in Yuma.
Yeah, okay. I lived there for 4 years, my dad being military.
Yep.
We got a choice. I was living in Anaheim, and it was a choice between going back to Beaufort, South Carolina, or Yuma. And my dad, for some reason, chose Yuma, probably better than South Carolina. I'm not really in the crawdads, you know. So the reason we went to Yuma was he thought the schools were better there. And I don't know how he came up with that lie.
That's pre-internet. He couldn't do any research. It was really probably a dark.
But once I got to Yuma, going from Anaheim to Yuma, though, that was kind of rough because we went in the summertime. I think it was June. And we left and we got there at night. And it was over 90 degrees at night. And I don't think I've ever been when it's dark. Dark over 90 degrees. I think I cried a little bit. Like, I guess I shouldn't have shoplifted. You know, I think that was my torture.
Well, then let me ask you: what brought you up to the Valley, the Phoenix area, is where we're at? So, what
ASU.
Brought you? Okay.
Yeah, my sister was going to school there, so I came up and lived at the dorms with a buddy from Yuma.
Nice.
We were friends. We were in the Funny Men's Club. You know, like four or five guys got together, and we were the jokers of, you know. But we didn't really do anything. We just hung out and pretended like we were funny. So me and Larry got a dorm together at Best Hall. And I think we were like one semester together. But then something was going on where he needed to meet a lot of women. So he had to join a fraternity. So he left me. And that left me vulnerable because now you're open to any schmuck coming in and being your roommate.
Yeah. Yep.
And I lived with a couple of schmucks, at least one. But one guy, Steve Parmalee, he was cool. It was good that he was my roommate because he was like an artsy kind of guy. I was an artsy kind of guy. He smoked. But he had a bad shroom trip one night, and he almost died. So,
whoa.
But luckily he did, because he's gone on to, you know, when you like you get like pieces of junk and stuff, and you put it all together, and you make something kind of artsy. he does that now.
Really? That's
cool. Yeah. So,
and so are you still artsy? So?
I was doing some stuff with AutoCAD.
Yeah.
And, like, with Illustrator and Photoshop. Mm-hmm. And now I'm relegated to Paint. And Paint's not that, you know.
It's kind of tough, yeah.
Right. So
we were talking earlier. Illustrator is one of the things I just never could warm up to, but Photoshop.
Kind of like Photoshop.
Design, yeah.
But it's kind of.
The layers are different. I mean, it was just different for me. And, you know, I had no real reason at that point in my life to really dig in and learn.
Right.
Where I did need a reason to dig in and learn.
Photoshop was giving you everything you needed.
Yeah, certainly as a web designer at that time and things like that. Absolutely. So, but.
I am kind of artsy, but nothing. Like, I'm not making money off it or anything. I just like create stuff. But, you know, there's got to be some catalyst, like making a present or something.
Do you, you're in the sports too, right?
Yeah.
Like football.
I like watching more than playing.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Hell, I'm too old.
But the sports I can play are like bowling.
Yeah.
Volleyball. That's about it.
How about pool?
Oh, yeah, pool. Yeah. Is that a sport?
Much more than bowling. Or not so much as bowling. Who knows? They're both kind of the same.
It's like, if it's competitive, is
yes.
that what?
Well, you know, I always considered, and I bowled a little bit in my life. That's another lifetime ago. But I always considered it more of a skill sport,
yeah.
Which I think pool is too. Darts is too, you know, a little bit different.
But like poker, that's competitive, but it's not
absolutely,
really.
Absolutely, yeah. Actually, that's a good point.
That's not a sport.
Probably not.
Battle of the Minds.
Yeah. I've never been in the cards, which is good because your Vegas story scares me. But.
Right, yeah. But it was only a joke, so don't take me literally.
John, I have to. I don't know why.
You're so deadpan. Me. You don't know me that well.
Yeah,
right?
Your delivery, though, is so believable. I can't help it.
Right. I'm so dry.
Yeah.
Everywhere.
Well, here's the deal. You know what? I thank you so much for being here. We live close, so we might do this again. Again, I want to thank Badlands. This place is awesome, other than the choice of music that you don't like. Great food, great atmosphere, and even better people. The ownership's great.
And it's close to his house.
Yeah, I could stagger home from here, which I may have before.
Location, location, location.
Love this place. But, you know, here's the deal. It's a little off the beaten path. It's off of, what do they call it, the access road off the 101 for people that live in Arizona, in between Elliott and Guadalupe, and it's on the west side. Absolutely great place. You got to come here. And we just thank them so much for allowing us the time to kind of chat a little bit here. So that's it. John.
Wow, that was quick.
Now it's you. Thank you for being on. And we may have to do this again because there's so much of this music. But if not, I just want to thank you for the time. I really appreciate
it. We might go bar hopping and do some more tapes and stuff. And he's an expert, an editor, so he'll be able to put it all together. And I think that's really cool when, you know, you can, like, take a bit here, and then maybe I'll be funnier somewhere else because I'm more comfortable.
Yeah.
Because, you know, this is the first time I'm at Badlands, and it's not the closest bar, but
yeah,
I'll give them, like, a half a thumb up. It's like meeting a friend, you know? It's, like, not the first meeting. Or meeting a person, and you become friends. It's not always that first meeting. It's meeting them again, and you find out, you know, more about them, and if they're Republican or Democrat.
Well, we're not going to get into that on the podcast.
What?
I don't go there. You know?
Yeah.
But anyway, thank you so much for being here.
Okay, thank you. Zach,
we don't know what to do.
You should do it with your hand.
All right, thanks.
There you go.
Well, everything's right-handed in this world, so I'm just used to doing it.
Yeah.
All right, we're done. Thank you.
All right.
Hosted by Mike Boland. If you want to be a guest on the program, reach out to Mike at his email address, mike@mikeboland.com. This podcast is produced by One Hand Man Productions. If you are looking to start your podcast, go to onehandmanproductions.com.